Hey, what's up, guys? It's Haley Bailey. Okay, I need to tell you about something. I just got YouTube Premium. It's got tons of awesome features like offline downloads, so I can download my favorite videos before I travel and watch them whenever I don't have Wi-Fi. Because we all know airplane Wi-Fi is the worst. I get ad-free, I get background play, and there's like a ton more in there. You should try it. If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Try it now for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium.
If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm Dan Pfeiffer. Joining me today is former senior advisor to President Obama, David Axelrod. You all know Axe. Maybe you've heard him on this pod, listened to either of his shows, Hacks on Tap or The Axe Files, or you've likely seen him on CNN. Axe is an all-around expert that can speak to anything in Democratic politics. I asked Axe to come on the show because I wanted to talk to someone smart about the midterms, both what the map looks like for the Dems after a series of devastating court rulings and what he thinks of some of the candidates running up and down the ballot. I also wanted to talk to him about messaging, namely how some of the party's leading voices and likely 2028 candidates are talking about the administration and if their theories of the case are actually any good. We shared a great and wide-ranging conversation, which we'll get to in a minute. But before we do, if you're a friend of the pod subscriber, which if you aren't, you should be, you can now buy tickets for this year's Crooked Con. There is a special pre-sale just for subscribers. But if you're not a subscriber because you hate pro-democracy media and love listening to podcast ads, you can buy Crooked Con tickets next week starting on May 19th. Either way, it'll be a big fun party right after the midterms, November 5th to 7th in Washington, D.C. Go to crookedcom.com for more details, including how to become a friend of the pod subscriber. All right, let's get to the show. Here's David Axelrod. David Axelrod, welcome back to Pod Save America.
Yeah, it's good to be with you, brother. Always good to see you.
It's been a long time since I've seen you.
It has.
But yeah. I assume I'll catch you in Chicago in about a month at the Obama Library opening.
I'm looking forward to it. I went through there the other day. Have you been there?
I have not. I talked to Cody Keenan after he went, and he said it was quite emotional, actually, and pretty amazing.
That's exactly. I went over sort of out of a sense of obligation. They had wanted me to come see it. And I found it incredibly emotional. It really was like reliving the journey. Yeah. So I'm anxious for you guys to see it.
Yeah, we're very excited about it. All right. Fortunately, we got a lot of things happening between now and then. We are now less than 6 months from the midterms. A few weeks ago, things looked great. Democrats felt like they were on a glide path to taking the House by a pretty significant margin. Then, over the last few weeks, there's been nothing but bad news. Supreme Court guts the Voting Rights Act. The Republicans are rapidly redrawing the map, eliminating Democratic districts across the South. Virginia Supreme Court throws out the new map that would have given Democrats four seats. As a party, we've returned to our natural state of panic.
Yes.
Where do you think things stand right now in the race for the House? How worried are you?
Look, Dan, you know the history of this. There have been 39 midterm elections since World War II, and the party that is in the White House has gained seats in two of those 39 in 1998 and 2002. And in both those elections with Clinton and Bush right after 9/11, they both had approval ratings in the 60s. These races are, no matter how hard, and you and I were on the losing end of this, no matter how hard you try, there are always a referendum on the president, and very rarely do you win in that because it's an opportunity for people to express their their discontents. So, I mean, it is still the case that Democrats, I think, are probably significant favorites to win the House, just not the prohibitive favorites they were. And I think this is a flashing light in this regard. When you're in a campaign against Donald Trump, it's sort of asymmetric warfare, because he does not adhere to rules and laws and norms and institutions. I mean, that's a disadvantage for Democrats who are accustomed to doing that. And so this is one element of what he has in his asymmetric toolbox, but we still don't know what is going to happen relative to voter suppression, voter purges, the Justice Department showing up and seizing voting boxes, and all kinds of other things that are meant to depress Democratic turnout. Now, I figure if the people of Hungary can do it, the people of the U.S. should be able to also, but because obviously Orban threw that many obstacles and more up. But I don't think anybody should take anything for granted. This is going to be a bumpy ride from start to finish.
Yeah, I mean, when you just look at the numbers, right, Nate Cohn estimates Democrats need to win the popular vote by 3.9% to take the House with this map. That even presumes Republicans definitely getting that seat in South Carolina and maybe getting two in Louisiana, where they're only going to get one. And we're on track for that. It's just what that margin is really hard for. It's just not what should be given Trump's approval numbers, given the economy. And then that we may still get, look, you win the House by one seat. Hakeem Jeffries is still Speaker. He's still in charge of every bill that passes. But it's, can you keep the House in a less favorable political environment 2 years from now, 4 years from now? And that's where the
no, I think really that's a valid concern, because I don't think the full effect of the Voting Rights Act kind of rescission by the Supreme Court is going to be felt in this election, and that the Republicans are not going to have as much time to organize around it. And a presidential election, you know, used to be that a presidential election favored Democrats because the infrequent voters tended to be Democrats. Now, you know, the midterm elections and special elections favor Democrats because the Democratic Party, for better and worse, has become a party of sort of metropolitan professional, white collar people, college educated folks who tend to vote regularly. This used to be a Republican advantage. So I think, you know, the next elections could be more challenging if the margin is small. As to November, you know, Trump's numbers are abysmal and they're getting worse. His numbers on the economy, which was the calling card that got him elected in many ways, are atrocious. You know, 30% in the last CNN poll. Among independents, 23%, because it's his base that's keeping him buoyed. And those independent voters are going to be pretty important in these swing states and districts. So, you know, this is why I think he will reach into this bag of tricks. And on top of that, whether he spends it or not, we'll see. But he'll probably have $600 million. He had $300 million in his super PAC at the beginning of the year. And let me tell you, when you get, you know, millions and millions of dollars in donations from the families of people you pardon in advance of the pardon, that's a very efficient way of fundraising. Half the money at least comes from people who have, government interests. Like I said, there's nothing that the words that you will never hear flowing from this president's mouth is, well, we could do it, but it would be wrong. That's just not going to happen.
That is a thing you can hear from Democrats' mouths. And like going forward past this election, you know, you talk about the asymmetric warfare, and, you know, Hakeem Jeffries is out there since decision saying we have to have a total warfare approach. Virginia Democrats, at least for a minute, look relatively seriously at the idea of changing the age limit on their justices to retire all of them and replace them. Turned out to be whatever other problems there were with that plan, it just turned out to be logistically impossible to fire the justices, get new justices, draw new maps, and get them approved at time for the primaries. But there's been, since this decision, there's been talk about, you know, like expanding the playbook. Kamala Harris was doing a Zoom call with a political group where she talked about court reform, multi-member districts, all these things. What do you think about how Democrats have to change our approach over the medium term and the long term here to maybe narrow that asymmetric gap?
Yeah, well, first of all, look, I think that you heard for the longest time, and it was reflected in polling, discontent with the leadership and both Jeffries and Schumer because of a perceived passivity. I think Hakeem has changed his tone markedly lately, in part because he's trying to hold his troops together here. I'm mixed on this, Dan, because I understand the stakes and I understand the idea that if the other side is playing tackle, you can't play touch. On the other hand, you know, this is the lot of Democrats. If you're the party who actually believes in rules and laws and norms and institutions, it's very hard to reconstruct them once they're shredded. So I'm struggling with this as to how far we should go. The best thing we can do is, embrace the right message, which is going to be more important and even more important in 28 than 26, because there's so much that should be pushing our way if we become the party that we should be, which is to respond to the fundamental concerns that people have been expressing again and again and again that Trump has ignored. I don't want this next several years to be defined by a contest, between who can be more clever in sort of gaming the system. I don't think we have to if we are the party that honestly is responding to a system that is in many ways corrupt and rigged against people. And we're offering a real vision for the future that holds out some promise for real, bold, and genuine reform.
Yeah, I go back and forth on this too. I generally believe that it is in the country's interest to find ways to make our institutions more democratic. And when they are rigged towards one party or the other, that is bad because it suppresses the popular will. That's why I'm very open to, term limits for Supreme Court justice, things like that. The one thing I'm very confident that we just have to do, and it's not an option, is redistrict to maximum advantage in 28 in the states where we can do that. Just because you just can't. This is a little bit like, we hate dark money, but the other side is taking all the dark money, so we can't unilaterally disarm. I think we cannot unilaterally disarm here. So I think whether it's Oregon, Colorado, Illinois, Maryland, Pennsylvania, these states where we have control, we have to do it because there are just the number of states that Trump has won three times just hold a lot more seats than the number of states Democrats have won three times. So we kind of have to do
no,
that.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree with that.
I hate it, but...
Yeah, but it's just like changing the age limit on the Virginia Supreme Court. I don't know about that. I don't think that's where we want to be. I just don't want, Trump would do it to be always be the yardstick by which we measure ourselves. One of the geniuses of Trump, and let's be clear, he does have certain genius. Kind of an idiot savant in many ways, but one of them is that he exposes hypocrisy very well. I mean, when you see the law firms that folded and the universities that folded and all the politicians who have folded on principles that they heretofore had held close, his point, this is what Donald Trump really believes. He believes the world is the Hunger Games, where the strong take what they want and the weak fall away, and everybody has a price, and rules and laws and norms and institutions are for suckers. That's what he believes. And every time someone submits to that because they think they're going to somehow win his favor, they help prove his point. But that's separate from this issue of redistricting. But he does bait you into these fights so that he can say, well, they're no better than I am.
Yeah. If everyone's corrupt, you might as well take me.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Let's pivot to the Senate here, where, John, despite discussions of possibly making Venezuela a state, Trump has been unable so far to rig the map in his favor, although he has some advantages inherent. In some of the states that Democrats need to win or have to win, like Iowa and Michigan, we're in the midst of some pretty divisive primaries, which are They're exposing all kinds of divides in the party. They're being seen as, they're being treated as proxy battles for the future of the party. How much do you worry about this sort of Democratic division? Do you think it's generally healthy for the party to have these fights now?
It's really hard to avoid them. You know, we don't have command and control, even though sometimes those in Washington would like to have that. At some point, you know, you do hope that people will evaluate their own chances to win a primary and, you know, perhaps influence the outcome of a primary, but with no chance to win if people get to that point. You would like to field the best candidates in the general election. And part of the way you find out who the best candidate is to see what they do out there. I think in Iowa, you know, I think Turek is probably the strongest candidate in the general election. And I think he is showing himself to be that, and will probably be the nominee. Michigan's a more complicated case. It's a three-way race. Just in terms of skills as a political athlete, Abdul El Said is probably the most gifted athlete of the three. Whether, you know, there's concerns about whether he, in terms of his positioning, is the best candidate for the general election. And we'll have to see. But I do know this. If Democrats are going to take over, it's almost impossible to believe that Democrats would take the Senate without Michigan, without holding Michigan.
Absolutely.
So that's absolutely. That's the reason for people's concern, and it's a legitimate concern.
This is a perfect opportunity for me to point out that Pod Save America is hosting a Michigan primary debate on next Sunday's episode, where Alex Wagner is going to host a conversation with the three Democrats in the race, Abdul El Said, Mallory McMorrow, and Haley Stevens. Very excited about this one.
Yeah, I didn't even know that, and I set you up nicely there.
I know. Well, I asked the question for the hope that I would get to the point where I could
Well,
say
you're
that.
Pitching, I'm catching, brother.
That's right.
Pod Save America is brought to you by Fast Growing Trees. Fast Growing Trees is America's largest online nursery with thousands of trees and plants for every space and every climate. And they make it easy to get plants that actually work for your yard delivered right to your door. Okay, we can sense a little skepticism about ordering live vegetation online. John is skeptical. But the proof is in the planting.
It sure is.
They said their line was the proof is in the plants. No. Proof is in the pudding, so the proof is in the planting.
You're right, Tommy.
I nailed that. Fast Growing Trees, that punch-up was free, has shipping plants down to a literal science. Every plant is hand-picked and carefully inspected, and their packaging is designed specifically to keep them secure in transit so they don't get damaged. They even have a lab where they test the best packaging materials to protect against cold, heat, humidity, and more. So when your plants arrive, they look like you just bought them at the local nursery. Plus, every order is backed by their Alive and Thrive guarantee, so in the off chance you have issues with the delivery, you are covered. Right now, Fast Growing Trees has deals on spring planting essentials, and listeners get an additional 20% off your first order with the code CROOKED at checkout. That's 20% off at fastgrowingtrees.com with the code CROOKED. Terms and conditions may apply.
Today's show is sponsored by Strawberry.me. Thinking about switching jobs? Oh, no. Was not expecting that answer.
I'm a no.
Ask yourself these questions. One, am I growing or showing? No. One, am I growing or just repeating the same experience over and
definitely
over?
Definitely the latter.
That's a tough one. Okay, let's go to two. Do I feel energized by my work?
Depends on the day.
Or am I constantly drained and counting the hours until it's over?
Oh, boy.
No, I feel very
energized. Today I feel drained.
Yeah, that's true. It's Friday. Do I know what my next career move should be?
No.
Or am I just hoping something better shows up?
Yes.
I mean, yeah. If you think it might be time for a change, you should talk to a career coach through Strawberry.me.
Think they could get me on Rogan? Yeah.
Their coaches work with you one-on-one to understand your strengths,
daily.
Identify your gaps, and build a clear roadmap toward a career you're actually excited about.
Can I do Call
like
Her Daddy?
Like when Tommy appears on Tucker Carlson's show and takes over for him. Because the biggest risk isn't making the wrong move, it's staying stuck without a plan.
That's true.
Take control of your future at strawberry.me/crooked today and get 50% off your first coaching session. That's strawberry.me/crooked.
What did you make of what happened in Maine? Because that seems to be sort of indicative of
a shift in the party, a shift in what people are looking for, maybe a sense that the Senate leadership or the establishment is, at least in that race, and not was not in touch with what the voters wanted?
There are a lot of factors here. One is that I think we're in an anti-establishment moment, and that's true in both parties. I think there is a real jaundice about the status quo. You know, I mentioned earlier, you know, 70% of people in polling say the system is corrupt and rigged against them. I think there is a sense that Washington, you know, when you'll remember back in the day, Dan, when Barack Obama ran, one of the reasons he won was because his campaign was a full out critique of Washington generally, not just the Republicans, but Democrats as well, and the sort of red-blue, who's up, who's down kind of struggle for power that had nothing to do with people's lives or principal concerns. I think we're back there again. And so establishment candidates are at a disadvantage. And Janet Mills, who's a perfectly good person and has served honorably, was very much the establishment candidate, and she had the she had the stamp of Senator Schumer on her to certify that she was the establishment candidate. And she would have been 79 years old when she got sworn in. So part of the other discontent people feel after two octogenarian presidents is with, you know, the gerontocracy in Washington, which also speaks to establishment politics. People don't feel like the folks in Washington are in touch with their lives or focused on their lives. And I think Trump has exacerbated it because he ran contending that he was. And then, you know, and he now we're into, you know, ballrooms and monuments and, you know, graft on a scale we've never seen before. This is one place where he says nobody's ever seen anything like this before. He's right about this. Nobody's ever seen corruption at this scale before. And so people feel betrayed, those who voted for him or who had some hope for him. And all of this, I think, makes a candidate like Plattner in Maine appealing because he's a grassroots guy. He seems to be speaking the language and living the life of people who feel unrepresented. And but it was stunning the degree to which he was able to take that, by storm. I mean, just literally blow the incumbent governor out of the race. I actually wonder a little bit if he would have been better served by her hanging around for a while.
I 100% agree with that.
You know,
there was no need to start for it. I'm not surprised Plattner won. I was very frustrated at the DSCC and Schumer for endorsing Mills to begin with for all the reasons you said, just the idea that we were just going to decide from on high in Washington that our best chance against Susan Collins was a 79-year-old establishment politician. And I say that as someone who likes Janet Mills and interviewed her on the show.
Yeah,
she's Joe Biden.
She's not.
But it's the model everyone rejected last time. And Plattner turned out to be, you know, I certainly thought he would definitely win prior to all the online posts and then thought he navigated that well enough to survive and then knock her out of the water. But he would have been much better off if this had gone to the end.
100%.
He had a chance to beat her. You delay 100%. The general election by another month. Instead, now he's already got negatives against him from, you know, pro-Susan Collins.
Yeah, I don't blame her, though. She ran out of money. And I'm not sure that she was that eager to hang around just to let him claim the trophy, you know. So one other thing I think this underscores, and you know this from your own career, don't let yourself get talked into running for an office you don't want to run for. Because it's never going to end well. You're not going to be an effective candidate. Plattner, by the time she dropped out, he had done, I think, more than 50 town hall meetings in the state. She had done, I think, zero. And if you guys have a huge listenership, so if I'm wrong, I'm sure someone will tell me.
It's a number closer to zero than 50, I'll tell you that.
Yes. Well, there's no doubt about it. Yes. And, he's hungry for this and he's eager for it and he's young and he's, you know, going after it. And, So getting drafted against your will is a bad way to enter a race. Don't back into a race.
Another race the Democrats are very excited about and very interested in is Texas. Our old boss made his first campaign appearance of the cycle, getting some tacos with James Tallarico and Gina Hinojosa, who's running for governor. Trump weighed in on the race on his way back from China on Air Force One. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
The Democrats have a weird candidate. Six genders, a real hit on Jesus. This guy is bad news with his mask from relatively recently. And he's a vegan, all of a sudden he's not a vegan. He was a vegan, now all of a sudden he's not. Texas doesn't like vegans. I do believe either one of them will easily win the race. I think that the candidate the Democrats have in Texas is a very flawed, very weak, I think he's a pathetic candidate, especially for Texas.
You know that Shakespeare thing about thou doth protest too much? Yes. But you know what's interesting about the dynamic in the Republican primary is that the folks who want John Cornyn, they'll say privately that they think Tallarico's too left for Texas. They've got plenty of stuff. They could take him out. But they're not saying anything because right now what they're saying is Tallarico can win unless we knock Paxton out of the race. If Paxton wins, Tallarico can win. Once this primary is over, they're going to open up on him, and they're going to, along the contours of what Trump is saying, I'm sure he was briefed, a bunch of his guys are working on the Cornyn campaign. But interestingly, he hasn't endorsed Cornyn. I trust that when Tallarico went out for tacos, that he had beef or chicken.
Is that not a vegan, as Trump pronounced
it? A vegan,
it?
Yes.
Not a vegan taco?
Not a vegan. Did I hear that right, that he's bad on Jesus or something? What did he say there?
He said he had a hit on Jesus, which references, I think, I'm guessing here, which shows I'm way too online, great question. I think it was at the same time he said the six genders thing. I don't really know, but there have been some clips from a speech he gave in 2020, I imagine, or right after that have been going around. I think Trump has obviously seen those and he is doing it, but I'm not sure the idea that James Tallarico's anti-Jesus is going to sell.
No, I'm sure that he would love to have that conversation directly with the president. You know, you can't like violate like many of the major Ten Commandments and then start going after someone else over their Christianity. You know, I mean, Tallarico is clearly very, you know, serious about his faith. And that's one of the reasons he is where he is, because that's translated really well. And he has preached the gospel of the brotherhood of man, and people who are so tired of all this conflict are responding to him. So we'll see what happens. I think Texas is hard. You and I have gone through campaigns together where we held out hope for states like Missouri at one point, and it always turned out to be fool's gold. And the question is that the case here? One of the wild cards in Texas is that, Trump won a solid victory there, but it was with a lot of Hispanic votes, particularly in South Texas. The two biggest losses in terms of support for Trump have been among Hispanics and young people. Hispanic voters, I think, they're very sensitive to economic issues. They're a working class constituency in the main. And I think in South Texas, I think they were eager for border control. They weren't eager to be racially profiled. And I think because of all the stuff that ICE has done, combined with the economic stuff, he has completely dealt away the advantages that he gained among Hispanic voters. That puts Texas more in play. It also means that they're probably not going to capture all the seats they thought they were going to capture when they gerrymandered the state.
Yeah, Texas is interesting. I think Tallarico is a uniquely talented candidate.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
He's very good. He is, I think, if anyone can do it, it's James Tallarico in this year, particularly against Paxton. he, you know, the Latino numbers you point out are very notable. Pew has a poll out today, which shows that Trump's approval rating among Latino Trump voters is down 30 points since Election Day 2024, which is, you know, that's a big chunk of voters. You know, we saw this in the primary, right? It's a primary, but Tallarico got more primary votes than Kamala Harris got votes in, you know, sometimes by magnitude of two or three. In some of these Rio Grande Valley counties, she got two or three times the number of votes Kamala Harris got on Election Day in 2024. So there's obviously some persuasion. This is not just turnout. There's some persuasion happening here because a lot of these people, these Latinos who voted for Trump were registered Democrats. So it's interesting.
No, I was going to say just on the Hispanic issue, I think one of the reasons Trump is harping on him and, you know, and Christ is that I think it's very advantageous for Tallarico to be able to go into churches across Texas, including Hispanic churches, and as fluent as he is in scripture. And so I think Trump is trying to chip away at that. What were you going to say?
I was going to ask you about the decision to have Obama come to Texas for him. Like, it is a race where he's got to win. You know, Trump won Texas by 13, I think. He's got to get a bunch of people who pull the lever for Trump to vote for him. Do you think bringing Obama was a good move?
You know, I haven't seen his numbers in Texas, but my guess is that looking at his numbers nationally, they're not bad. And there is a, you know, Obama's not campaigning that much for candidates at this juncture. I'm sure he will. But there is a stature thing. It kind of elevates Tallarico in the race. And he may just want to, you know, because of the whole vegan thing, as you said, Trump said, maybe he just wanted a guy who really appreciated a good beef taco.
Yeah. And I imagine that Obama's numbers with Latino voters, even Latino voters who voted for Trump, are quite good. And so with like Tallarico's smart, his campaign's being run by smart people. They're not just doing this because it's good for TikTok views. Like they obviously have looked at their data that suggests that with their target voters, Obama is a plus. And the others, it's not like there are a bunch of Republicans who are going to stay home because they're mad at Trump. And all of a sudden Barack Obama shows up for tacos one day in May. And they're like, okay, we're turning out.
One last thing on this. I mean, one of the reasons Trump's going after Tallarico is because it seems pretty clear that he's decided to stay out of this race. There was a presumption that he was going to endorse John Cornyn as the most likely candidate to win. He's now been convinced that either of them can win. But the Paxton question is really an open one because he's a guy who is absolutely freighted with scandal. And while he's very popular with the Republican base, he could be very vulnerable with some traditional Republican voters in the suburbs around the big cities there. I don't think Obama's going to play badly with those voters. I don't think it's going to hurt Tallarico to have him there with those voters. So we'll see. But I will say, I mean, because of the fool's gold PTSD I have, you know, I'm looking, you know, I look at Iowa, for example, and I'm wondering, is Iowa ultimately going to be a better shot than Texas? Is Alaska with Mary Peltola and the ranked choice voting system against a very weak incumbent in Sullivan, does that give you a better chance? Here's the thing. When you have to win a couple of states where Trump won by double digits in any case, and you want as many opportunities as possible. So Democrats can turn to Alaska, to Iowa, to Texas, even, and I think it's the longest of them, but even Nebraska, you know, where you have an independent candidate supported by Democrats who did very well in a Trump landslide last time against Ricketts, the senator, the incumbent senator, former governor. I think that there's a better than 50-50 chance that Democrats can piece it together, assuming that the wave is what we think the wave could be. And remember, the wave is more important in these Senate races. You know, they may piece districts together to hold down the House margin, but statewide, you know, harder.
Positive America is brought to you by Tommy John. What do you love about Tommy John? Well, it's not just a surgery anymore. You know what it is?
Not just your two hosts right here.
Yes, it's an undies brand.
That's right.
And they actually, well, they have all kinds of actually undergarments. They got t-shirts and all sorts of great stuff. Well, here's what you like about Tommy John. Their underwear, they're soft and they're durable. They're breathable and they're lightweight for all day comfort, especially
you don't want your underwear
outside.
Suffocating.
No, no. They've got a curved pouch. It's designed for comfort and control to support and flatter your natural shape.
Does your natural shape flatter?
It flatters the hell out of what I got. The Stay Put waistband ensures your Tommy Johns won't roll, bunch, pinch, or leave marks. And their unique quick draw fly provides a horizontal opening for fast, easy access when nature calls. Here's the thing about Tommy John. I bet you have sitting in your drawer right now a bunch of old, disgusting underwear that is like a year past its prime. This is what you do. You go to the drawer, you take the underwear, you throw it out, you put it all in the trash, and then you go to TommyJohn.com and you buy it all again. Maybe you buy it first, wait till it arrives, then throw out your other underwear or else you're
going to be
commando for
a
few days.
Tough period.
So here's what you do. Go to TommyJohn.com today. Save 25% off your first order with the code CROOKED. Comfort perfected. Just use code CROOKED at checkout and upgrade your essentials today. TommyJohn.com. Save 25% on your first order with the code CROOKED.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Haley Bailey. Okay, I need to tell you about something. I just got YouTube Premium. It's got tons of awesome features like offline downloads so I can download my favorite videos before I travel and watch them whenever I don't have Wi-Fi. Because we all know airplane Wi-Fi is the worst. I get ad-free, I get background play, and there's like a ton more in there. You should try it. If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Try it now for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium.
If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Yeah, the Senate map is, I mean, it's challenging. It's kind of shocking. And it says everything that we'd be sitting here now and you'd say it's a coin flip that we take the Senate or even maybe even a little bit better than a coin flip. When I look at it, if you're just doing like most likely scenarios, like I would probably pick Alaska of the Texas, Ohio, Iowa, Alaska. Probably I'd pick Alaska just because of the fact that Mary Pontola has won in that state before. There is ranked choice voting. Dan Sullivan is particularly unpopular. And then, you know, I think maybe Ohio.
Yeah.
And then the other.
Ohio, I Sherrod Brown came pretty close last time as Trump was carrying the state by double digits. And he's running against a senator who was appointed, who's never run on his own statewide. And who doesn't have a huge image in the state. So he's going to be more associated with Trump just by dint of having no real profile. I mean, he was DeWine's guy. He'll try and run that way. But he can't run away from Trump. Trump won't allow him. And it's very hard, as you know, to run away from an incumbent president anyway. So, Sherrod Brown was a economic populist before economic populism was cool. I think, I'm not sure that I would rate Alaska over Ohio, but I think that the most likely combination, if Democrats are to take the Senate, would be North Carolina, Maine, Ohio, and Alaska.
Yeah, I'm sort of stipulating Maine and North Carolina as must wins because winning three of the other four is hard.
Yeah. But Plattner is going to, You saw David French wrote a very tough column in the New York Times this week about him. And I mean, not that people read that, but that was the tenor of what he, you know, they're going to go back at him with more ferocity. But Susan Collins, you know, after all this time and given the nature of the times is a really vulnerable candidate, you know. So we'll see, for all the reasons we discussed earlier.
It's the Susan Collins thing is interesting because she has been like, she is a Republican in a state that Democrats win by 9 points. We should beat her, should have beaten her in 2020. She's very tough to beat. She's been fortunate enough to be able to avoid some of the worst votes this time around because of the Senate margin.
Yeah, they cut her loose to do it. Yeah,
she didn't have to fight for the big, beautiful bill. She got to take a pass on some of the worst cabinet appointments. But she still is a Republican in a Democratic state and one who represents status quo. You know, it's going to be a very fascinating race. And the question is, you know, you and I both know the folks working on that race is, can Plattner withstand what will be a massive amount of scrutiny, some of it from his own side, because there are people pretty pissed about how this race played out, and every possible dollar dumped on his head with some of the nastiest stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we'll, you know, time will tell about that. Yeah, I heard someone tell me about a focus group in that state, and someone was talking about Susan Collins, and they said she's bipartisan. She's only bipartisan when it doesn't count. And I think that's something that a lot of voters there kind of intuit. And, you know, she didn't vote for all of Trump's Supreme Court nominees, but she voted for some.
She voted for the ones that counted, for sure.
As I pointed out to someone, it's, you know, you can remove a tattoo, but you can't remove a Supreme Court justice. So, you know, that we'll see how that goes. It'll be a fascinating, fascinating race. But I'm assuming that Plattner wins the race in the end.
That's my hope for sure. You know, both in the House and the Senate, everyone keeps saying the campaign's about affordability, 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 affordability. Like, obviously, just saying the word affordability is not actually a message. Although, you know, some Democrats have the habit of reading the stage directions instead of the script. And so they're just saying affordability over again. Is a message around affordability enough? Does it need to be bigger than that? What do you think Democrats should be saying?
Well, I think that we have structural issues in our economy. We've got the affordability issue is hitting people hard, but people have been, you know, kind of bobbing in the water and not gaining for a long time. And the polarity in our economy gets worse, and AI is going to turbocharge that, at least in the short run, maybe in the long run. And I really think, I don't know that it's necessary to win in November. There are discrete things you could propose in order to win in this November. But as I said, it's largely a referendum. Anybody who runs for president better have a much bigger vision about how you reform a system that was broken before. I've always, you know, I think it's a mistake to assume that when you run in 28, that the message could be, we're just going to kind of restore everything that Trump knocked down, because people weren't that happy with the system before he knocked it down. I mean, they didn't feel they were being well served. And, you know, they felt the system was corrupt. They felt it was rigged against them. They felt that they weren't getting ahead. And that's, you know, it requires big structural kinds of answers to put some equity into the system, but also to genuinely try and reform a system that is, you know, since our, you remember when our boss warned people about Citizens United in 2010, and Justice Alito was deeply offended by that and shook his head on the floor. Everything he said has happened. I mean, we are awash in money and dark money and pernicious influence, and it all conspires against working people. So campaign finance reform is really important. We also have to think, I think Democrats, you know, what strikes me, Dan, is that we have this battle going on between the great ideas of the 19th century and the great ideas of the 20th century, you know, tariffs and no civil service and so on from the 19th century, and then, you know, sort of Rooseveltian structures in the 20th century. And we're in the 21st century. And we ought to be thinking about how do we solve the problems of today using the tools of today and not be wedded to the old ways of doing things. Be wedded to creating a country in which people can work hard and get ahead and where we can deal with some of our most pressing problems. But don't assume that the way we approach them in the 20th century is necessarily the way we have to approach them now. I think there's a lot of room for a genuinely reform-oriented candidate who has some vision for the future to move this country. I also, now you put the quarter in, you're getting 10 plays, but I expect
nothing less. I love it.
But you know, I've been thinking a lot about this election, and no two elections are alike. But if you were going to say, well, what is this election most like? It goes back to one that you will not remember, but I do, which is the election of 1976. It was the first election I ever voted in right after Watergate. And the country was stunned by what happened in Watergate, by the corruption of Richard Nixon. And by the way, you know, there was a real politicization of the Justice Department, of the CIA, of a lot of these institutions. I mean, it was somewhat analogous to what we're facing today. People wanted to a cleansing. They wanted to give Washington an angioplasty. They wanted a fresh start. And that's how Jimmy Carter emerged in 1976. No one would have known who Jimmy Carter was at this point. And he became the nominee of the party and he won. I don't know who that person is, but I think that two things, qualities of character are going to be very important. Empathy, decency, honesty, integrity, humility, all the qualities that Trump doesn't have are going to be prized in 2028. And the second thing is, I think being an outsider who's willing to really challenge orthodoxy in Washington, challenge the institutions on behalf of people is going to be a candidate who's well received.
This is a perfect segue to what I want to get to, because we're going to have a little fun here. I'm going to play some clips from some potential 28 contenders, and I'll get your take on them, both as messengers, what they're saying. But before we get to that, I want to, you sat down with AOC at the Institute of Politics before a live audience. One of her answers went quite viral. I'm going to play it for audience. I'm going to ask you about it.
It was very clear this was a veiled threat, right? So the elite saying, if you want this job, you just stepped out of line. They assume that my ambition is positional. They assume that my ambition is a title or a seat. And my ambition is way bigger than that. My ambition is to change this country. Presidents come and go. Senate, House seats, elected officials come and go. But single-payer health care is forever. A living wage is forever. Workers' rights are forever. Women's rights, all of that.
So a couple questions on this. Did that answer was a Rorschach test for people about whether she was going to run for president or not run for president. I wanted to see, how did you take that? Do you think that means she's planning on running for president, planning on running for the Senate, doesn't yet know?
First of all, let me say, I thought it was a really powerful answer. You know, I heard Favreau say the other day that if you want to run for president, you better know what you believe. And what she was saying there is, I'm not in politics for a job. I'm in politics for goals that might impact positively on people's lives, the kind of people who I grew up with, the kind of people who live all over this country. And I think she really means it. And I think that authenticity is really powerful. That said, if you know, she said other things in this answer and elsewhere in this conversation that made me think she really isn't hungering for that job. And if I were her, what I would be thinking is I want to have an impact. And I'm not ready to sideline myself. The chances of anyone getting elected president, no matter how good they are limited. And, you know, she's 36 years old now. She'll be 38. She could walk into that Senate seat in New York. And interestingly, with this crowd of young people, I said, you know, some people would like to see you run for president, and a bunch of them cheered. And I said, and others would like to see you run for Senator Schumer's seat in New York. Louder cheers.
I couldn't tell if they were cheering for her to run for senator or cheering for the fact that you said Schumer was up.
So yeah, no, it was definitely a combination of those two things. You know, she's got a high class problem here. She'd get a lot of votes if she ran for president. But I think the way I interpret what she said is, I'm going to go where I think I can continue this fight for those things that I believe in and have the most impact I can have right now. And that led me to conclude that she is more likely headed to the Senate race than to the presidential race. I mean, it, nothing she told me, nothing I, but was I reading between the lines, I would be more surprised if she ran for president than if she ran for the Senate. And you and I both know that she would not be one of 100 if she went to the Senate. When Barack Obama went to the Senate, he was, you know, number whatever, 99, 98 in the Senate, but he was not the 98th member of the Senate. People were always interested in what he had to say.
Yeah, I worked for, as you have as well, worked for many politicians who were planning to run for president and who got this question for the years leading up to the actual announcement. And the general approach is to just start muttering words until the questioner stops paying attention, and they're terrible at it. And this is I say this without any hesitation, the best answer I've ever seen of anyone asked that question.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it really does help to be motivated by doing something than by being something. I mean, the world of politics divides into these two cohorts, the people who run because they want to be something. And that's the larger cohort. And then the smaller, more admirable and the more impactful cohort are the people who run for office because they want to do something. And that doesn't mean they don't have personal ambition, but you really, you know, honestly, I would say this to anybody who runs for president. It's too damn hard to do it. I don't mean just to win, but it's such an arduous thing to do. Don't do it unless you know why you're doing it. And just, you know, and if you think that it's such a prize to live in a gilded prison, you're making a mistake. You know, no one ever will feel sorry for a president of the United States, but you do change your life forever. And it's not all positive. I mean, you basically give up your, you know, a lot to do it. I think, I'm not saying that she won't run, and I'm not saying that she won't run someday. But based on what I heard, and if I were betting on it, I would bet that she's going to the one place and not the other.
I had the same impression the people who have wanted to be president since they were 17 years old.
She said that.
It's obvious in the answer, and she's clearly not one of those people.
She said that. She said, I'm not one of these people who've been planning planning my campaign for an office since I was seven years old. She said, you know, we all remember her when the night she got elected to or nominated to the Congress, and she was in her headquarters in a billiards hall in the Bronx with some supporters around her, with her hand over her mouth and her eyes wide open, watching these returns come in. She was as surprised as anybody.
Whatever she decides. When she first came to Congress, she was clearly one of the best communicators in terms of how you communicate. Like, she understood the modern media environment better than almost anyone in Congress, which is not saying a ton. But, you know, she's doing Instagram Live. She's on social media. She knows how to do it. But I think in the last couple of years, she's also become one of the best messengers in the party. Like, about what she actually says, like, it's very powerful and very
resonant. She came there. She's the youngest woman ever elected to the House. I think we've watched her mature as a political leader during those 8 years. I think that process is ongoing, you know, and I think she knows that too. But she's an impressive person. The reason that she is so good, yes, she knows how to use social media and modern media. But the thing that you can't teach and the thing you can't buy is the ability to communicate authentically and to give people a sense that you're talking honestly with them. That's what great political leaders do. And she has that quality. So that's a hell of a thing to build on.
Pod Save America is brought to you by Built. We can all agree that housing is expensive. Rent, mortgage, doesn't matter which one you're paying, it stings every month.
Sounds like the California debates we've been watching, governor's debates.
Seriously. But Built can make it feel a little better. Let me explain. Built started out rewarding members on their rent. Now, as of 2026, Built members can also earn points on mortgage payments wherever they live. Every housing payment earns you points you can use toward flights with top travel partners like United and Hyatt, Lyft rides, Amazon.com purchases, so much more. You can use it for fitness classes. You can use it for parking. There's gift cards at over 120 brands. You can use it for, as a down payment on a home, student loan balances, different restaurants. But here's what I think is the most underrated part. Built members also get access to a neighborhood concierge.
Cool.
It can make restaurant reservations, book fitness classes, and find new local spots, all while being rewarded at more than 45,000 merchant partners. It's like having a personal assistant baked in to where you live.
I don't think you should bake your personal assistant.
I don't think so either. But I would like a neighborhood concierge.
That would be nice. I wonder, you can use your Built points from your rent to go to a restaurant before you go see Rent.
Oh, wow.
A musical. Did you see it in Boston like I did when you were in like middle school?
Yes, I did.
It was like the only play I'd seen in my life until I was like,
I knew that 30. One song. That's about That's all I've grasped from that.
The Candles one?
Yeah. It's simple. Anyway, what are we talking about, Bill? There it is. It's a math problem. It's simple. Being a renter and now owning a home is better with Built. Join the membership for where you live at joinbuilt.com/crooked. That's joinbilt.com/crooked. Make sure to use our URL so they know we sent you.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Hailey Bailey. Okay, I need to tell you about something. I just got YouTube Premium. It's got tons of awesome features like offline downloads, so I can download my favorite videos before I travel and watch them whenever I don't have Wi-Fi. Because we all know airplane Wi-Fi is the worst. I get ad-free, I get background play, and there's like a ton more in there. You should try it. If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Try it now for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium.
If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAPS sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons, from tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond. Every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
All right, let's watch some other people, see what you think about it. I'm going to start with John Ossoff, who may or may not run for president, but he certainly has to win re-election in Georgia first. Let's take a look at one of his recent rally.
How does American politics really work? It's coin operated. Money goes in, favors come out. It's been running on secret money, corporate money, billionaire money, both sides. Both sides. Citizens United was the worst court decision in modern American history.
Yeah, he's singing from my hymn book there.
Yeah, I know. But what do you think about him as a communicator?
You know, he's a great communicator. I haven't seen him as most of the time when I see him, he's behind a podium. And, you know, there are other elements of communication. And I haven't seen a lot of that. Although I just spoke to someone you and I both know who saw him at an event. You may have been at the same event because I think it was out west. And said he was really, really good in kind of off-the-cuff interaction with people and so on. Listen, I take him seriously. You know, if you believe what I said earlier about the kind of candidate who will do well, he checks a lot of those boxes. And he hasn't been, even though he is a senator, he has not been there long enough to be sort of corrupted in people's minds as a practitioner of inside the Beltway politics, which he's not. So, it's a quick turnaround. He's young. But I think youth also is an advantage in this election because after two presidents who were in their 80s, I think people are going to be really looking for a more youthful candidate.
Yeah, you raise an interesting point because I think he is the best speech giver that I've seen in a while. You know, there's a whole generation of politicians sort of raised on Obama who speak like Obama. And I think he does the best, like you can see it in the tone. You know, like he has some of the same pauses, the same cadence, but it doesn't look like Obama karaoke, which sometimes
he apparently, we've seen that too. He apparently does a lot of writing. You know, Obama, you know, he had great speech writers. You work with some of them, but they would tell you that, you know, they would give him a product that was in good shape and then he would buff it up or add things that took it from one level to the next. And he, because of that, he was familiar. He felt organic to the copy he was reading. So I think he has that. But the other thing that people don't appreciate about Obama, and you would because you travel around with him, like, you know, those 87 days we spent in Iowa, where he was, you know, doing 6-8, you know, stops a day, more even, in small venues, interacting with people. He was very good at that. You know, you have to, running for president is a decathlon. It's not just one event. So you can be great at, you know, pole vaulting, but you still have to, you know, throw the javelin. And so the test of campaigns is, how do you do all, the events well enough to win? So I don't know that about Ossoff, but he's certainly a promising politician.
Yeah, I want to see him, you know, I mean, this is a very self-referential way to say, but like, can he pass the podcast test? Can he sit and like shoot the show? Like, I was just watching a clip of Obama.
Pfeiffer.
Well, I mean, well, he's been on our podcast. He's done fine, but like, it's not really, can you come on Positive America or Hacks on Tap? It's, can you go on Rogan or All the Smoke? Can you relate to people on a cultural, personal level that's not just politics?
The test that Vice President Harris wouldn't take.
Yes, yes. All right, let's do the next one. Is someone familiar to all of us, Pete Buttigieg.
There is a powerful American majority for change and for the things we believe in. Because right now, you got this administration that's created the illusion that their positions are supported by most Americans, and it's just not true. Most Americans agree that we should be taxing the wealthy more, not giving giant tax cuts to billionaires. Most Americans think it is nuts that we're being told we can't have nice things like rural hospitals and good roads and fully funded public schools at the same time that you got billionaires paying a lower tax rate than the nurses in those hospitals and the workers who work on those roads and the teachers who teach in those schools.
What do you make of Pete?
Well, look, in many, I've said this before, he is as bright and thoughtful as anybody I've seen since Barack Obama in terms of his ability to sort of think in interesting ways and posit arguments in ways that really are clear and thoughtful. He's a very, very talented guy, I like him a lot. I mean, and I think he's underrated in this. You know, I mean, when you hear conversations, people don't talk about him, but he, you know, every time you look at a poll, and some of it's name recognition, yes, but he's well regarded by Democrats, and the things he's articulating out there kind of they square up with some of the things I'm saying. He's talking about renewal, not restoration. He's talking about reform, you know, like basic fundamental reforms. I don't know whether experience in the Biden administration is advantageous or not. Maybe not.
I guess net neutral at best is maybe my guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, I haven't never had this conversation with him, whether if he had to do it all over again, whether he would have opted for that. He might be in better position than he was. You know, there's always this question about an openly gay man running. Is America ready for that? And look, he the one thing that he did not prove in 2020 was that he could win black votes. And that is a really essential task for anybody to get through this process. You know, black voters in the South in particular are really, really important. And so, you know, there are questions, but the talent is undeniable.
Yeah, I think Pete's incredibly smart. I saw him at an event recently, and he's so good. Off the cuff, he's so good answering questions.
Yeah, he does the podcast. He passes the podcast.
Yeah, those things. The thing that was always the black voters is like the math. You can't. It's just impossible. You can't win. The math is such with primaries across the South, the way delegates are allocated. There's no way to do it.
Right.
It's why Obama won. It's why Hillary won.
Right.
It's why Biden won.
Right.
But the thing about Pete's communication in 2020 was it always felt to me like a little bit at a remove. Like he was so good and so polished that, you know, it just like there was this distance between.
I think it's a really, I think it's an important observation. Yeah.
But I will say when he was on CNBC a few weeks ago and he was arguing with Joe Kernan.
Yes.
I thought it was some of the best people. Like Pete will go on and he'll like get every word exactly right on Fox News and he'll stuff Sean Hannity into a proverbial locker or whatever else. And it's incredible. But when he was on with Joe Kernan, like he showed. Like he was so frustrated and so angered by the stupidity of and the unfairness of what Kernan was saying. That it was one of his most authentic moments. I thought it was quite, quite good. And I think maybe indicative, like his life has changed a lot since 2020, right? He's got married, he's had kids, he's been through times. And I think it'll be very interested to see how he's an involved candidate this time around. Because if so, there's real potential. And he benefits from the fact that New Hampshire is probably the first state. And it's a place where he has a great base of strength.
Yeah, and continues to poll well. Don't underestimate the value of having run the track before. You know, or just to use another sports analogy, he knows the lay of the greens. And running for president is not like running for any other office. So he knows the pressures of it. He knows the cadence of it. He knows this stuff. That is a valuable asset.
All right, let's look at Andy Beshear, the governor of Kentucky.
You've seen how some of this speak has crept into the Democratic Party, and we sound like we're talking down to people. We've got to talk to people and not at them. You know, Kentucky got hit by that opioid epidemic as hard as anybody. But maybe West Virginia. I mean, we've all lost people we love and care about. I didn't lose one to substance use disorder. I lost them all to addiction. If we want to push back against this president and what he's doing to SNAP, trying to hold hungry people hostage for political gain, it can't be that they'll be food insecure. It's got to be that they'll go hungry. We've got to communicate to people and the values that they know and how they would talk to each other.
Electability is obviously going to be a huge issue for Democrats, as it was in 2020. No one has a better electability story than Andy Beshear. What do you make of him?
Look, I mean, again, going back to the things I told you before, I mean, you have to look at him because he's an outsider. He's also a guy who, by the way, can go into those black churches in a compelling way. And in terms of empathy, most of the time when we've seen him over the last 8 years, it's because his state has been beset by some natural disaster or, you know, in some cases, a horrific gun incident. And he's really, really good at that. He's great at expressing empathy. I sort of agree with what he said there. The thing I would say is it's not just about the language that we use, it's about, and I've said this a lot of times, my objection to Democrats since the Democratic Party has become a kind of metropolitan, college-educated party is we're still a party of working people or see ourselves that way, but we approach them like missionaries and anthropologists, and we show up and we say, we're here to help you become more like us. And the implied message is that what you do really isn't as important as what we do, except Dan, when we have a pandemic and then we're home and we're making our living on our computer and they're out there caring for us, protecting us, making things, shipping things, and doing everything it takes to keep the country going. And then we go out on our balconies and we bang our pots and we say, you're the essential worker until the pandemic's over. And then they sort of become invisible again. So I think it's more, it's about more than just the language. We fundamentally have to think about how we value people in our society.
All right, last one we'll do is Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro.
We have an opportunity to have a real debate within our party about what we stand for, about what our affirmative vision is. It has to be about what we are going to do to make people's lives better. And I think that that is a debate that our party hasn't had for a good long while. And that debate is not only going to help the Democratic Party, I think it's going to be healthy for this country. And what I can tell you for sure is that I want to be a part of that debate. Bring the common sense sensibility of what we do in Pennsylvania to that conversation.
Like Beshear, Shapiro has won the key state of Pennsylvania. He's likely going to win it again by a very large margin, which will bolster his electability case. What do you make of Shapiro?
Look, he's a very talented and very smart. And what he said, I obviously agree with. He's one of the guys who he can slide into sort of pigeon Obama from time to time, and he's taken a lot of criticism for it. He can be a little irascible, and for him, I think the important thing is to be real. He's so smart and politically savvy that sometimes you feel like he's giving the politically savvy, well, manicured answer, and you don't know what you don't see the person behind it. So those would be the concerns that I'd raise. But look, I thought he should have been the vice presidential candidate in 2024. Probably good for him that he wasn't. But I think highly of him, and he's got some good stories to tell. That story about the sort of record pace at which they repaired the fallen bridge in Pennsylvania is a metaphor for something that Democrats need to struggle with. Is if you're the party of government, how do you assure people that government can work? And he's got some examples to underscore that. He also, Dan, he's forged a relationship with working class voters and rural communities in his state. I think he does approach those voters respectfully and has built alliances there that I think is very useful and important and instructive. So, you know, again, you've got a good assortment there. I know you only have a short period of time, so you can't put all 106 aspirants right. up there, but yeah. that's a pretty strong assortment of candidates.
Yeah, you know, this Shapiro, it's probably not discussed enough how popular he is in Pennsylvania. Being a popular governor of Pennsylvania is not an easy thing to do. This is a state that Donald Trump has won twice and has moved away from Democrats. As we have moved away from Pennsylvania demographically as a party. He basically has a coalition that combines the new version of the Democratic Party with these college-educated suburbanites outside of in the collar counties around Philadelphia with some of the numbers that Democrats like Obama and Clinton had in the rural parts of the state in the great expanse between Pennsylvania and between Philly and Pittsburgh. And it's very impressive.
Let me ask you a question. And based on, you've got your finger on the pulse of the left and the party. The question that comes up oftentimes from Jews, and I'm Jewish, is, well, can a Jew get elected given the antipathy toward Israel now? And now he's been a very strong critic of Bibi Netanyahu. But how big an issue is that? Do you think that's an insuperable barrier for Democratic candidates? I don't, but you would know better.
I don't believe being Jewish is a barrier that cannot be overcome for a Democratic candidate. I think that any Democratic candidate is going to have a vociferous criticism of the Netanyahu government, is going to have to take very strong positions that would have seemed impossible a few years ago about conditions on aid to Israel, about funding the Golden Dome. I mean, even your close friend, my old boss, Rahm Emanuel, came out suggesting he would not be for that. Like, I think what you cannot be seen, you don't want to be seen in a Democratic primary as the pro Netanyahu candidate or the AIPAC candidate or someone who's associated with the Biden's administration's position or policy on Gaza. So I think he can do it, but those are going to be tricky waters for him to navigate, given some of the ways in which he's approached those issues in his past.
Well, let me say,
he's changed his rhetoric in recent, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, one thing you said, I quite agree with. The attitudes have shifted in ways we wouldn't have predicted because Bibi has done things we never would have, predicted. Perhaps we could have or should have, but the way he prosecuted the war in Gaza. I say this as a Jew. It's, you know, I was horrified and angered by what happened on October 7th. But that doesn't mean that I don't grieve for the children of Gaza and that I'm not repulsed by the way that unfolded. And I don't think you're going to find candidates, Jewish or not, who don't agree with that. One interesting thing is that they have an election in Israel in October. Bibi Netanyahu may be gone by the time this campaign begins in earnest. And you wonder whether that changes anything, you know?
Yeah, it's a very open question of what the world will look like when these candidates actually have to go get votes in New Hampshire or whatever other states in the early part of the calendar in early 2028. I did not play a clip from Kamala Harris. If you had asked me 2 or 3 months ago, I would have put the strong odds against her running. I think in recent months, she's been out there more. She's been doing more things that suggest that maybe she's seriously thinking about running. What do you make of that?
I don't know what to make of it. I mean, she obviously is making noises as if she's going to run. And, you know, once you run for president, especially when you come as close as she did, especially under the circumstances she did, very hard to look around and say, why not me? But I also don't think America is going to, and Democrats are going to ultimately go for the Back to the Future candidate. You know, there are a lot of seared memories of 24, and a lot of it don't have to do with her, but with her boss, in the White House. But, it didn't end well. There are a lot of Democrats who were hoping that it would. And part of it did have to do with her inability or reluctance to do the things that you have to do at that level. Go on those podcasts, be real, be open. And of course, the answer on The View, under the withering interrogation of the of the people on The View, to not be able to answer the question that I think any sort of competent candidate for at any level would know how to answer when asked, is there anything you would have done differently? She didn't have to say, yes, these things. She could have said, I'm grateful for the opportunity he gave me. I'm not going to critique him here. I'm here to tell you, I'm not running to be the second term of Joe Biden. I'm running to be the first term of Kamala Harris, and I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I mean, there are a million ways to have answered that question. She just couldn't find any of them. And those are the moments that define campaigns.
Yeah, you know, it's from her perspective, right? As you came very close, you know, she believes, as many people in the campaign, that given more time, she might have actually won that race, or if she had not been thrusted, if she had a chance to actually, if Biden had just not run at all and she'd won a primary, she could have maybe actually won. You know, no way to answer that counterfactual. But you look at, you know, one way she's leading in all the polls right now, and now you and I know, and everyone knows that oftentimes the person leading in the polls at the beginning is leading by dint of name recognition and nothing else, and that falls pretty quickly, like it did for Rudy Giuliani in 2008, Joe Lieberman in 2004. But it still is true that you're not winning the Democratic nomination without running up the score with Black voters across the South. And you look at that field right now, and she's the candidate best positioned to do that. So she could make an argument to herself about how she could win that nomination. Now, the question will be, you know, and this was, I think, the experience John Kerry had when he was thinking of running again in 2008, is he was all ready to go, picked up the phone, started calling all his old supporters,
yeah,
and they were
right.
Hillary, I'm with Biden, I'm with Hillary, I'm with Obama, I'm with Edwards. And she might have a similar, you know, I don't
and
know.
And not just probably, you know, from what I understand, not just supporters and donors, but even some key staff You know, look, I respect her, and she got thrust into a really difficult position. But I just don't see this. And I mean, I do think she's the beneficiary of early name recognition on this issue. She may well do, you know, really well with African-American voters in the South. But I keep thinking back to 2019 when she was a co-front runner with Joe Biden when she entered the race, and she never made it to Iowa. And her numbers in those southern states weren't that good. So I don't know. You know, there's one. I just don't have enough information to know, but I don't think she, I think she's going to receive some tough news from some of the people whose support perhaps she was counting on.
Anyone I didn't mention that you have your eye on?
Actually, it's kind of uncanny because you listed a bunch of folks who, you know, look, I got two guys from Illinois, right?
Yeah. I was looking for a good Rom clip to play at the end for you, but yeah. I didn't want to
look
do that
Rom.
To you.
Look Rom. You know, I would say that Gavin Newsom won the presidential primary of 2025. I think Rom is doing pretty well in 2026, at least with opinion elites. I mean, he's throwing out a bunch of ideas. He's really aggressive. You know, and we'll see where that takes him. Governor Pritzker is running for re-election, but it seems pretty clear to me that he's headed in that direction. And he's shown a lot more serious political chops than I would have expected when he first ran for office. He does have affection among among the Democratic base. You probably hear it in your own. And he's got the advantage of resources. So, you know, I wouldn't draw him out of the circle. Rumors emanate from Washington that Cory Booker might run again. He didn't do that well in 2020, but he's got talents, he's got gifts. And in an election that may be about sort of character, and kind of the, you know, to borrow Biden's phrase, though no one should use it, the soul of America, which honestly is going to be important in 2028. You know, he's a guy who can speak to that. But I, you know, I don't know if he can, you know, do appreciably better than he did. But I'm also like open to someone we haven't, you know, someone coming from somewhere we don't even know. Like I said, this is an election that's grooved for an outsider. And it may be, you know, you hear about Mark Cuban, you hear other people mention. So who knows? Who knows? I remember calling Jon Stewart in 2019 after Zelensky got elected president of Ukraine, before Zelensky became, you know, the wartime leader, the Churchill of our time. And I said to John, you know, short Jewish comedians, they're all the rage right now. you know, don't count him out.
All right. Well, that's, I think it's a great place to leave it. John Stewart for president. David Axelrod, thanks for joining us. Always great to talk to you.
See you in Chicago.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Dan.
Pod Save America is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Austin Fisher, Saul Rubin, McKenna Roberts, and Farrah Safari, with Reed Cherlin, Elijah Cohn, and Adrian Hill. Our team includes Matt DeGroat, Ben Hefcoat, Jordan Cantor, Charlotte Landis, Kirill Pelaviv, David Tolles, Mia Kelman, Ryan Young, and Naomi Singel. Our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
A burst pipe, a dead water heater, the AC calling it quits. Who do you call?
HomeServe is an easy way to handle unexpected home repairs with plans covering stuff basic homeowners insurance usually won't. Instead of scrambling for a contractor, you make one call to get the repair process started. Join the millions of customers who trust HomeServe right now. Go to homeserve.com/podcast for 50% less your first year. That's homeserve.com/podcast. Savings compared to renewal price. Void in Florida.